Now we're holding on Kuf Samaches Omud Beis, six lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about the whole issue with writing a new shtar to replace the old one, and the mission we talked about where the old shtar is it where the old shtar is fading, or has already faded, and you have a new shtar written that that basically recaps what it said in the old one. We learned yesterday about the situation with the people in Pumbedisa whose fields and the shtaros with them were being taken away by Goyim. So continuing on that topic, Tanarabanan, Hareshaba the Omar Ovid Shtar Chovi. Suppose a Malva comes to Beis Din and says my Shtar Chov has gotten lost. And of course he's claiming it hasn't been paid off yet, etc. Afal pisha omru edim onu kasavnu v'chasamnu loy. Even if the edim said, even if the original edim are able to come to Beis Din and say that that we wrote and signed and gave him the shtar, ein kois v'lois a shtar. We can't write him. We can't write him a new shtar. Because after all, here he's saying that it wasn't paid back, but maybe it was. So even if they were to write without achrayus, because after all, maybe the original shtar was not for maybe the original shtar was not lost. So if nothing else, he could use the new shtar, even if there's no achrayus written in it, he'd still be able to use it to collect from bnei chodin, from property that actually is in the hands of the loiva right now. He might also find the original shtar and then try to collect the debt twice, etc. So we can't do that. So Bamedvarmamurim continues the Braisa. Now, when is that talking about Bishtari Halva? So with loan documents for that reason, because he might go and use it to collect where he's not supposed to. Avoshtore Mekachom Memker, but when it comes to documents of sale, where a person sold karka and wrote out a shtar for it. So then if the Edom are able to testify that this is in fact what it said in the shtar, Koisvin, then they would be able to write him a new shtar. Who again? Who it is? Similar to what we learned in the Mishnah, who it is that writes him? Who it is that writes him a new shtar would be would it be the Edim? Would it be based in whatever? Anyway, the point is that this way here they can write it. However, chutz min achrayus shaboy, however, they have to write it without the achrayus in it, because the whole point is, as we were starting to talk about yesterday, and as we're going to talk about in the Gemara now, we don't want that he's going to be able to use the second shtar to collect. From remember, usually real estate is sold with achrayus, meaning that there's a clause in there. If Reuven is selling the field to Shimon, but there's a clause in there that in case it gets taken away from Shimon by Levi, to whom Reuven owes money, then Reuven will reimburse Shimon. So you don't want to, and that if Reuven himself doesn't have what to reimburse with, that Shimon will go after Yehuda, Yisachar, whoever else Reuven has sold property to in between, and you don't want that he's going to use the shtar to collect something that he shouldn't. So therefore, so you have to write the document without the achrayus clause, and we're going to see later on in the Gemara exactly according to that what nusach do we write to make sure of that. The point is, in other words, that this way the shtar is just there available as a proof that he bought the that he owns the karka, but that's it. So in the story we had yesterday with the Balabatim of Pumbedisa and Abaya, one possibility is he could have written them a shtar without achrayus. So one possibility isn't according to this anyway. First of all, we're going to have Reb Shimon Gamliel's opinion, who disagrees, as we're going to see now. So one possibility is that he could have written them a shtar without achrayus, but they didn't want that. They wanted davka a shtar that had all the details of the original one, achrayus and all. Or the other possibility is Abaya held like Reb Shimon Gamliel, as we're going to go on to say now. So the Gemara, the Braisa continues. Reb Shimon Gamliel, af shtar mekach memker ein koisvin. Reb Shimon Gamliel says you can't write a new shtar of mekach memker either. The reason is that Rashbam explains based on, as we're going to go through the sugya over here, he holds that he holds osius niknis b'mesira. The shtar, we talked about this earlier in the Masechta as well. The shtar can be you're able to be koina the shtar just by handing it over to the other person. So even without achrayus, what happens is, what happens if the lekeach would want to resell the karka back to the moicher? All he has to do is give him the shtar and osius niknas b'mesira, and therefore the result is that he would now be coin of the field again without anything further. So now the concern is that after you write him, after the original shtar mechira was written, what happened if he returned this? What happened if he returned this the shtar and therefore returned the field? And now we're going to have a shtar out there that says that he owns the field again, and that's going to create problems as far as fraudulently claiming for fraudulently taking possession of this field, where in fact it doesn't belong to him anymore. The chain hoyer of Shimon Gamliel Omer, and so too Reb Shimon Gamliel would say in this connection, hanoisin matona lachaveroi, person gives a present of karka to somebody else and writes a shtar, the hechz lois a shtar, and the recipient gives back the shtar, chozer matnosai, then the gift also goes back and goes to the original giver. No further kinyan is necessary. V'chamem matnosa kayemas, whereas the chacham say the shtar, that whereas the chacham say, even though he returned him the shtar, the matona would still be valid, unless he makes a new kinyan on the karka or until he writes him a new shtar. Therefore, said Reb Shimon Gamliel, in other words, is being consistent with his opinion, since just the giving of the shtar alone is enough to accomplish the transfer of the karka, then therefore you can't write out a second shtar. Tosfos has a very, very, so there's a very, as you can see, there's a very, very long Tosfos over here that discusses many different angles on what Reb Shimon Gamliel versus the Chachamim are saying. So one point is that if we didn't make a second shtar, then the mocher would be believed to say that he returned me the shtar, and that I and therefore that the sale was voided because there's no shtar. If we make him a shtar, then each one of them is going to be taking out a shtar, and the lekeach will say, you wrote me a bunch of shtaris when you sold me the karka, and one of them you still have. So the Chachamim are saying, on the other hand, that just transferring the shtar is not enough to undo the sale. So even if the lekeach doesn't have a shtar right now, the mocher is still not going to be able to take back the karka unless he has some kind of proof. Then Tosfos goes through various questions about that. What about there are certain lashonis that can be written in the shtar that would make it that each one is like this. Usually one of them is a muchzik. One of them we have a certain. We know that he's in possession of the karka. Eventually, we have a chazaka of 3 years, as discussed earlier in the Masechta, but we're not at that point yet. But still, usually we have one of them is more muchzik than the other, but you can have a scenario where what about if you returned him the shtar on that same day? And Tosfos says that's highly unlikely that he's going to return it to him on the same day, and then you're going to say, I gave it to you today, and you returned it today. It's very unlikely. And Tosfos goes through and gives a different explanation of what exactly Reb Shimon Gamliel versus the Chachamim are saying. If there's no shtar, even if there was no second shtar, there's only the one. Then he'll be able to say, I have the shtar, therefore I can take away the property. You write a second shtar, even if he takes out the shtar, then again you're going to say that the lekeach is going to say, I had two shtaris and I returned only one, and I kept the other one, and therefore that doesn't mean I gave you the karka, and therefore so that's a whole different way of explaining it. So in other words, in the first explanation, the lekeach is going to say, you moicher had a bunch of shtaris, and then you gave me one of them, and now in the second explanation, we're saying basically the lekeach is going to say, I had a bunch of shtaris, and Tosfos goes through in great detail and discusses various questions and answers and possibilities about how to understand according to each of these opinions. Okay, so getting back to the Gemara anyway. So Omar Mar Chutz Me'Achrayus Chaboy. So we're saying, at least according to the Tanakhama, that they could write a replacement shtar, but they have to leave out the Achrayus clause. My timer. So why is that? Omer Rab Safra Lafisha and Kosvin Shnei Shtoris Al Soda Achas, because you can't write two Shtoris on one field. This is what we had yesterday in the story with Abaya, where he says to them, "Given that Rab Safra said that, then what do you want from me? I can't write you a second Shtar." Again, does that mean he couldn't have written one to them at all? It could mean that he could have written one without Achrayus here. Here, Rab Safra is saying that. Here, Rab Safra is saying only that you can't write a second one with Achrayus. But he could have written one without Achrayus, but they didn't want that. Or the other possibility is Abaya held like Rab Shimon Gamliel. So he mentioned Rab Safra's point because it makes it clearer. But nevertheless, what he really meant was, according to Rab Shimon Gamliel, you can never write a second shtar at all, as we were just talking about. As far as the basic machloikas, actually, as far as the basic machloikas between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, again, the Rashbam is saying the idea is that here the Chachamim are saying you write him a shtar without a chrayus, and again Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that if you give back the shtar, osius niknis b'mesira, then just handing over the shtar causes the transaction to happen, and then the Ritva explains in more detail. He says basically that Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that you don't need you just need to present the shtar itself. You don't need to present the edim mesira. You don't need to present edim that the shtar was actually given over. So therefore, we have a second shtar. Then he might have given the original shtar, and then if you write a second shtar, then he might have actually given him back the shtar, and then the original shtar, and then he's going to say, "Well, I did buy it back," and the buyer Shimon is going to say, "Shtorcha b'yodi my boy." Then why do you still have a shtar in your possession? Therefore, sort of Shimon Gamliel says that you can't write another shtar. And on the other hand, the Chachamim are going to say, listen, if you're going to present another shtar, then it's not only is it not enough to just give the shtar, and that would transfer the property, but you also need to have edim that show that there was actually a second transaction over here. Okay. In any case, So Rab Safra says, so Lafishen Kosvin Shnei Shtoris Al Soda Achas. With Achrayus, you definitely can't write two Shtoris on one field. Dilma Ozo Balchoiv Tordif Lelahai, because what might happen is, let's draw out our scenario. You have Reuven sold a property to Shimon. A Balchoiv to whom Reuven owes money is going to go with Tordif Lelahai. He's going to go grab the field away from Shimon in payment of the debt that Reuven owed him. So now, since there's a Achrayus, that means Reuven has to reimburse Shimon. And if Reuven himself does not have what to reimburse Shimon with, so he's going to go collect. So he's going to go collect from other Lekuchas. This one Shimon is going to go umapit chad. He's going to take out the one copy of the shtar that he has, the Torah of Lekuchas, and he's going to go take away from Lekuchas, from Yehuda or Yisachar or whatever whom Reuven had previously sold property to. And then he's going to go collect from Lekuchas. So far, that's fine. Then he tells Levi, who took away the original property. Shimon tells Levi, "Shufli, wait for me a while. Let me have this karka for a while. Look, shufli literally means calm down for me, meaning wait, let me have a few years of ownership of the karka until I have chazaka, until it's forgotten that until, well, not so much chazaka, but until people forget that I already collected from one lekeach, de ekumba, this way I can stand in the field, this way over time people will forget that I took this field in payment of the achrayus clause anyway, v'hoda ta tufan, and then you can go collect it from me, or mapik achrina. Then he's going to take out the second shtar, v'holder ozol torif l'kuchas achrini, and then he's going to go try the same scam again and take karka away from other l'kuchas in payment of his original in payment of the achrayus that's written in the shtar. So in other words, in short, there's the possibility of a knunya over here. With the Baal Chayv to get extra things that he shouldn't. So if you have Achrayus in there, then that creates a possibility of doing all of that, and therefore we can't allow that. So again, to explain the scenario in more detail. So again, what's going to happen is the Baal Chayv is going to come and say, the Baal Chayv is going to come and take from Shimon, and Shimon is going to say, you know what, I had a shtar for it, I lost it, write me another shtar. So now, again, having a shtar, he's going to go back to Reuven and say, look, the field that you sold me was taken away from me, and here's the shtar with the achrayos in it. So now what he's going to do is he's going to make a knunya with this Baal Chayv. He's going to say, you know, right now, if I go and exercise this achrayos clause using my second shtar, then everybody's going to realize that I'm cheating over here, because people are going to remember that I did this only a little while ago, that I used the achrayos clause. So he tells the malva, wait for me 4 or 5 years until the thing becomes old, people forget all about it, then you'll come and say again that I need to take the field away from you, and then take it away in payment of the debt, and then Shimon is going to say that, you know what, here I have a document, and I'm going to go and exercise the achrayus clause and take away from Lekuchas. So that's the issue basically over here, and therefore because of that knunya, we can't allow for a second shtar to be written. There is a point that Rishonim bring up that Uliu Lekuchas can say he nachti l'chol mokem ligbes hemenu, that you can't take it away from me. I have you have other people before me. You have other people before me who bought property. So therefore mine should be secure. So how is Shimon going anyway and collecting from people from whom Reuven sold previously? And one point is, we're talking about, let's say, that the field over here was an aposiki. Another point as well. The Yad Ramah makes a point that basically he can say that it's true. Shimon would not have to give the land to the Baal Chayv. He could, in principle, say, "Listen, I bought after you Yisachar, Zvulun, etc. So after Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, go collect from them." But again, he wants to do it in order to make this knunya. So therefore, so all of that is made possible only by having a second shtar, and therefore there's with achrayos. So therefore, the Tanakhama says you can't write a new shtar with achrayos. Without achrayos, fine, that prevents this whole knunya from happening. Therefore, the Tanakhama will be fine from it. We'll be fine with that. Reb Shimon Gamliel, as we said, will not, for a different consideration that we talked about a little before, and the Gemara is going to go into more detail later on. All right, the problem with that is, the Gemara says, how is the scam going to work? The kibben de karane l'shtara de malve. Now the process of collecting, of the process of collecting land in payment of a debt is a bit complicated. There's a lot of stages. There's a lot of things that have to be done with it, one after the other, in order to make it happen. So when you consider all the steps that need to be done, at one step during the process, you actually have that the original shtar has to be ripped up. So that being the case, then if the original shtar is ripped up, then how are we going to how is he going to be able to make the scam work in the first place? Namely, the Gemara says, the kibben de krane l'shtora de malva. Once we've ripped up the malva's shtar, because once Beis Din is going through the process of allowing the malva to collect something, to collect land in payment of the debt, then at that point, part of the process is we are going to rip up the shtar and say Well, now, you know, you're collecting something in payment to the shtar, so therefore you can't collect something again. But my hoda toriflei, so what is the malva going to be able to potentially use? Fine, let's say we have two shtaris on this field. Fine, but in order for this whole knunya to work, the malva himself still has to have his original shtar that says that he's owed money by Reuven. Once Beis Din is going to rip up the shtar, and once they make the arrangements for payment of the debt, then in that case, how is the malva going to have that shtar later and be able to try to collect with it again? So without that, the whole knunya won't work. V'chitema d'loy k'rane. So you're going to answer, okay, maybe we're talking about that they didn't write up the shtar. What about if they didn't rip up the shtar? What if instead they wrote a shoiver, which we're going to talk about further on in the Gemara about, we touched on it the other day, when do we write a shoiver? If a loiver comes back to pay a debt, do we say that the malva has to be able to produce the shtar in order for it to be given to the loiva, and then the loiva can rip it up or do whatever he wants with it so that the debt can't be collected again? Or what if the malva says, I lost my shtar, can we force the loiva to accept a shoiver, a receipt instead, which then he's going to have to watch. We're going to talk about that point on Amud Beis, and we're going to talk about it as we go through more of the perek. So we could be talking about that that let's say the shtar wasn't ripped up and it was agreed between them that we'll just write a shoiver and the loiver is willing to accept one. So in that case, the original shtar might still be intact. The problem with that is, so we have to now understand at this point the seder of how a loan is collected from nechosim mishubodim. So the Rashbam summarizes it as follows. The Rambam also gives a summary of it in Hilchos Malva V'Loiva. Starts with, okay, so the Malva comes to Beis Din and say the Loiva hasn't paid me off. So they issue a summons to the loiva to come to Beis Din. If he doesn't come, then we put him in Chayrim, etc. So you have all of those things that happened in the beginning. Anyway, eventually what happened was they get to the point of they write a shtar tirpa. That's a shtar that says to the malva, basically, you have the right to go and look around and find any karka that belongs to the loiva and find, or that previously belonged to the loiva that he sold after you were gifted or whatever after this loan, and then you're going to find something. So then you eventually find such property that's worth the amount of the loan, and then they write a shtar adrachta, which says that you're entitled to go and collect that debt. So at each stage in it, they write him a shtar, but each stage, the shtar from the previous stage has to be ripped off because you don't want him to go and reuse the shtar in another basin. What's going to happen, for example, you don't rip up the original shtar, then he's going to take his original shtar and go to another basin and try to start the whole process all over again. So here the Rashbam is describing that they have a stage in the process is the shtar tirpa, which entitles him to go and look around for any property that he could collect from. And eventually, when he finds one, then they write him a shtar adrachta, which says that he can collect from that. But Rambam, when he describes the thing, actually says the other way around. He defines the adrachta as the shtar that tells the loiva, you have the right to go around and look for property. Once he finds one, then you write a shtar tirpa, which says basically that he's entitled to go and collect that property. So basically the same thing, except just defining the names of the shtaris differently. Anyway, the point is, Reb Nachman says, Kol tirpa d'leikosid be'karan l'shtara d'malva, whenever the shtar tirpa does not say we ripped up the shtar of the malva, the original shtar that showed the debt, lav tirpa, that's not a valid tirpa, because what do you mean then? He's going to take his original shtar that says that Reuven owes him money, and he's going to go to a different Beis Din and try to start the whole process all over again. And then when we got to the next stage, to the adrachta, if we don't write that the if we don't write that the tirpa was torn up, lava adrachta, he is not a valid adrachta for the same reason, because otherwise he's going to go take that shtar tirpa and he's going to go and use that to collect other property and use it to collect other property with it. The chol shuma, and then we get to the next stage, which is the shuma, where Beistin evaluates the value of the field to see, okay, this field is worth X amount. You're going to take such and such percentage of that field in payment of the debt. So then we have a shuma, we have a document where they write down how much they evaluated, how much the property is worth. So deloik sibbe karan al adrachta. If it doesn't say in it that we ripped up the adrachta, which was the previous stage in it, lav shuma, he is not a valid document of shuma. So in each case, we have to rip up, and we have to write in the document that the previous one was written was ripped up, so that he doesn't use the document from the previous stage again and try to collect property someplace else. So here, okay. So the Rambam, when he formulates this, he defines the tirpa and the adrachta, the opposite as the Rashbam, and he has the tirpa and he has the adrachta first and the tirpa next, whereas the Rashbam has them the other way around. Either way, it amounts to the same thing. We have many stages in it, and in each stage it has to actually be written in the shtar that the shtar from the previous stage was ripped up. So given that, again, in the scenario that we had over here, the knunya that we're proposing that the lekeach Shimon might do is and involves him going and colluding with the Baal Chayv to go and collect the Chayv from Reuven again, and then Shimon is going to take out his second shtar and try to collect on his Achrayus again. But how does the Malva come to have the original shtar anyway, by the time we reach the point where he takes away the field from Shimon, where Shimon is first going to exercise his Achrayus clause, that shtar Chayv has long since been ripped up anyway. So how does the Knunya work? So the answer is, fine, but we could be talking about the Baal Chayv that we're talking about over here is not where he's claiming that Reuven owes him money, where then, yeah, there would be a Shtar Chayv and there would be all of that. But rather, Levi is coming and claiming that the Karka has to be given to me because I have Edim that this Karka belonged to my ancestors and Reuven stole it from them. So then the din is Levi doesn't need to produce a shtar for that. He only needs to produce edim that this field belonged to his ancestors. Now if Reuven or Shimon were to come and counterclaim in Beis Din and say, yeah, but I have evidence that you sold it to me, then fine. But in this case, Reuven doesn't have any such shtar. And he doesn't have any edim of the mechira. You could have, for example, that Reuven can well claim, I already had it for many years of chazaka, and therefore I don't have the shtar anymore. Fine, if he's going to claim that, then he may have a valid claim. Earlier in Perek Cheskas Abatim, in the third Perek of Or Masechta, the Gemara had dealt extensively with many such possible claims and counterclaims, where Levi comes and says the field is stolen. What Reuven can counterclaim to that? But in any case, the point is, if Reuven doesn't make any of those counterclaims, Levi doesn't need a shtar to say that he should take away the field from Shimon, who bought it from Reuven, who, by his claim, Reuven stole it from him, and therefore now you still have where... So no shtar, there's no shtar to be written up, therefore it's possible to make this knunya work. Which would mean that when we talk about a Baal Chayv, we mean the word Baal Chayv in a bit of a looser sense. A Baal Chayv means somebody to whom something is owed. So in this case, it's owed as a result of a gzela rather than as a result of the loan. But the difference being that in this case, you don't need a shtar, and therefore no shtar, nothing to be whipped up, and therefore it's possible to make this knunya work. So that's why the Chachamim are saying you can't write a second shtar with Achrayus, because then Levi could come and claim on the basis of that it belonged to my ancestors, and then later on again Shimon can tell him, okay, now that you took away this field from me, let's wait a few years until everybody forgets that you did that, then you're going to go again and claim that then you're going to go again and claim that meanwhile I will have used my achrayus clause to get a field from Yehuda, which Reuven had previously sold him in payment of what's owed to me for the field that you took away. Now let's wait a few years until everybody forgets about it, and then you'll come and claim that field from Yehuda. You'll come and claim that field from me again, and then I'll bring out my shtar and use my achrayus clause, and then I'll go and take away a field from somebody else. So therefore we can't have that second shtar and allow that to happen. Okay. So now the question is, why does he even, if that scam is going to work, in that case, why would Shimon have to tell the Baal Choyv Levi in the first place, let it calm down in this land? In other words, let's wait a few years before you come to Beis Din again with your complaint, the Ekumba, that I should stay in it for a few years until the whole thing is forgotten, and then we'll do the next part of it. Why would he even need to do that if he's going to be able to make the scam work? Typically, to come in the knock at today's shtari, tarif for hodor tarif. After all, since he has two shtaris, he would be able to do that. He'd be able to collect with the first shtar from one lekeach, and then use a second shtar to collect from the second lekeach. If both of them have achrayus, then he'd be able to do that. So that alone is reason enough for Reb Safra to say that you can't have two shtoris with achrayus on the same field. What do we need? Why would he even need the part where he's telling the loiva, or not the loiva in this case, we're saying the one who's claiming the field was stolen, wait a few years and until everything is forgotten? Why would he have to do that? And the answer is, okay, imkei nefishi alei baladin. And the answer is just that. Then there's going to be a lot of baladin against him. And then people are going to realize that he's pulling the knunya over here. So it's true. If he thought he could get away with it, he might do it faster. But he may realize that he might not be able to get away with it so easily. So therefore, he's going to try to make it a longer term plan and have that wait of a few years in between. But nevertheless, he could still make it work, and therefore we can't allow that. All right, the question still is, the Gemara says, still, what's wrong with writing a second one with achrayus? We can fix it up in another way. V'lichtiv lahai shtar amalya, let's write a full-fledged new shtar, achrayus and all. V'lichtiv, what about the concern about the kanunya? V'lichtiv tavra l'moicher, let's write to the moicher, to Reuven, we'll write a shoivo, we'll write a receipt, which says kol shtori di yipkona arada psulin, any shtoris that come out about this field are going to be this document certifies that all of them are psulin labar min di yipik bezim nada, with the exception of the shtar that has this particular date. So in other words, what we're going to do is we're going to write on this shoiver, we're going to write the date of the new shtar. So here, all this time, we've been assuming that the second shtar would bear on the ownership of the field would bear the same date as the first shtar. So why don't we do that? Why do we have to do that? Let's have that the second shtar, the replacement shtar, is going to be dated when it's actually written, not the date of the original shtar. And then we're going to write out a document that says basically that any in the future, if he brings any shtar mekach that has any other date than this one, is going to be possible. So therefore, if Shimon brings out the old shtar, then we're going to say then Reuven is going to take, then and he's going to come to Reuven and say, "New, where is my achrayus?" Reuven is going to pull out his shoiver and say, "Look, this shoiver says that document is possible, and you only have the new one." So why don't we do that? And that would avoid the whole problem, and that would allow us to write a replacement shtar with the with achrayus and with all that, and then again in the case with Abaya and the Balabatim, that would work. And then so why don't we do that? Tosfos actually points out that in the long Tosfos over here, one point they made is that we're talking about in all of this discussion over here, we're talking about where the moicher is not necessarily available. When we talk about at the top of the Amud, in particular in Reb Shimon Gamliel's opinion, where we said that maybe the lekeach returned the shtar to the moicher, and along with it, therefore, goes the field, So part of the long discussion in Tosfos was evidently we're talking about where the mocha is not available for us to ask. Otherwise, it's a very simple thing. We ask him, did you receive back the shtar or not? So if we're talking about over here, now we would assume the Chachamim, which is whose opinion we're dealing with over here, are talking in the same scenario as well, where the mocha is not available. Well, if he's not available, then he's not going to be able to pull out, he's not going to be able to pull out his shtar. So Tosfos says that no, actually, you don't have to say you don't have to say that Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim are arguing on the exact same scenario. You could, in fact, say that when the Braisa, or rather Tosfos says, since the Braisa says as a blanket statement, you cannot write a new shtar with Achrayos, then it doesn't really matter whether the Moicher is available or not. It sounds like no matter what, even if the Moicher is available, and even if he could conceivably pull out a shover, we're still not going to allow the writing of a second shtar in the first place. And the question is, why not? Wouldn't a shover counteract that knunya? So the Gemara says, Amru Rabbanan Kamedir Papa Va'amil Kamedir Abashi. So the Chachamim, when they were discussing this, when they were discussing this with in front of Rapapa, or some say in front of Rabashi, they pointed out Zosimeres in Kosman Shover. Well, the fact that we don't allow that possibility shows that we don't allow a shover in the first place. When we have later on in our perek, when we have a discussion we're going to have tomorrow, Bez Hashem, whether koistvin shover or not, we're again in a regular case we're with a loiva and a malva, and the loiva pays back the loan or part of it. Can the malva demand you have to accept the shover and you're going to have to hold on to that shover as proof that you paid all or part of it, or can we do something else? We're going to have a machlokes tanoim about it actually in a mishnah on kuf ayin amud beis. So the Chachamim say to the Papa or to the Rashi, evidently in our case over here, apparently in Kosvin Shover, we're not supposed to demand a Shover. So in our case over here, where the Lekeach loses his Shover, we don't want to rely on a Shover. The whole point, why don't we want to rely on a Shover when we learn the Machloikas about it, when we learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, about Rabbi Yehuda, about Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Yossi, whether Kosvin Shover or not. One point is, a Shover has an element of risk in it. If mice come and chew it up or something else happens, that the Shover is lost, then you have no proof that there was ever any payment or anything like that. Similarly, over here, you're relying on that the original seller, Reuven, has a Shover, and what if he loses the Shover, and what if mice eat it up or whatever? Do we really want to rely on that? So evidently, our case over here, our Braisa over here, and everything that we're analyzing in it, seems to take the view that, yeah, you can't rely on a Shover just to that you're going to prevent a Knunya that way. So you can't say, well, write a shover and have a clause in it that says every shtar on this field is possible except for one dated by this date, because yeah, exactly. What if the shover gets lost or something like that? However, a Papa or a Vashi tells them that's not really a proof. But Alma Kosvin Shover. Usually, we could in fact say that a shover will be written when a loan is paid off. As we're going to learn in the Mishnah tomorrow, Bez Hashem, where Rabbi Yossi says Yichtiv Shover. So usually we could say that there's nothing wrong that there's nothing wrong with writing a shover, and a malva has every right to say to the loiva, I can't find my shtar now, or you paid off part of the debt. I don't want to have my shtar defaced with writing something on it. Instead, I'm going to write you a shover. maybe usually you could do that. But here, when we're talking about Mekach or Memka, we're talking about buying and selling, is a different matter. Hainu Taima, the problem is, Duma also Baal Choy, Vatorif Mine Lekeach. Again, the Baal Choy, Levi, may come and take away from Lekeach Shimon, Vatorif Iyo, Vatorif Lekuchus, and Shimon is going to go twice and try to use his Achrayus clause, because again, he has two shtaris, and after all, Shover Gabal Lekuchus Leka, and Shover Gabal Lekuchus Leka, and after all, you're going to say you can rely on the Shover, you're going to say Reuven has a Shover that says that every other shtar except for one bearing a certain date is possible. Those Lekuchus don't have that Shover. How are they going to be able to refer to it to know that there is a, that there, that, that there is a, that there is a Shover out there? So therefore, so that's the concern. Sure, there can be a shiver, but that doesn't help. That doesn't help Yehuda and Yisachar and so forth, whom Shimon is going to be defrauding by taking away property twice from them in payment of the achrayus. They don't have that shiver to know which document, which deed on the property is valid and not. Okay, so the Gemara asks. Sof, lekuchas lav amri de ara hadri. Okay, but after all, aren't those lekuchas themselves? They also bought property. They also bought property with chayos. So they're also. So now Yehuda has had property taken away from him to pay the fact that Shimon's property was taken away from him. Eventually, Yehuda also bought with chayos. So he's also going to go back to Reuven. And he's going to say, wait, where's my achrayus? And at that point, Reuven will pull out the shover, and Yehuda will realize that he's been had, and then he'll go back to Shimon and demand back his land. So what's the problem? Fine, for the moment, things might get haywire, but soon enough we'll clarify it as soon as we go to Reuven and have a look at his shover. So the Gemara says, fine, but meanwhile, adahochi vahochi shamet v'ochol peri. Fine, but meanwhile, at that point, Shimon will have gone and taken away peris from that field, and then at that point already, it's going to be very difficult to get that back from him. It's one thing the land doesn't; the land always stays there; it never moves. So therefore, it's relatively easy to get back from him. No harm, no foul, because you have back your property. But meanwhile, the peris. Meanwhile, the peiros have been eaten, and it's going to be very hard to get them back. The Rashbam refers over here actually to a Gemara in Chulin that says kosher gezel hanechel. It's very difficult when you have gezel that was already consumed to be able to get it back. So here he may have already consumed the peiros, and it's going to be very hard for Yehuda to get it back. So, as far as the karka itself, eventually it'll get straightened out. But as far as the peiros, that's going to be gone, and we don't want to allow that either. By the way, in this connection, as far as a shover over here, Tosfos points out that you know, when it comes to when we said at the beginning of the sugya, we said you can't have two shtoris on the same halva because again there's a concern that he might try to collect the debt twice. Why don't we do the same kind of thing? Write a shover that says that the documents will be dated differently, and we'll say that we'll write a shover that says that only the loan from such and such a date is that only the shtar from such and such a date is valid and not the other one. But the thing is that then what are you going to do then? Anytime he lends him money in the future, he may forget about the shover, and then he's never going to be able to collect his debt again, and nobody's going to want to lend money with Mekach Memka, then you don't have that issue. So anyway, back to the Gemara. So again, so yes, in our scenario over here, what's going to happen again? Reuven sold the property to Shimon with Achrayus. Shimon now later on, the field gets taken away by Levi to pay off the debt that Reuven owes him. Shimon is going to go to Yehuda and exercise Zachariah's clause and get the property away from Yehuda. And then he's going to try the same thing again later on with a second shtar mecher on the same property, and we don't want to allow that. So therefore, we're saying that we want to prevent that. And we're saying, even though, yes, Reuven, let's say, has a shtoiver. So Reuven, let's say, has a shtoiver that says any other document on this field is possible, except for one, dated on such and such a date, the date of the original sale. But still, we have this concern that until Reuven pulls out that shtoiver, until Yehuda thinks of going to Reuven, to take a look at the shover. Meanwhile, Shimon will have eaten the peiros from the karka, and it's going to be very hard for Yehuda to get them back. All right, the question is, the Gemara asks, Yehochi lekeach shaloi b'achrayus, inami, or another possibility, lekeach shaloi b'achrayus. After all, every other person who buys property from Reuven is not obligated to buy it b'achrayus. He could conceivably buy it shaloi b'achrayus. Well, then now you have a real problem. If Shimon comes and takes the property away from Yehuda, Yehuda is never going to go back to Reuven to say, wait, I need my achrayus. I have to exercise my achrayus clause because he didn't buy it with achrayus in the first place. So therefore, so now you have Shimon may get away with this. So now Shimon may get away with this scam. And the fact that Reuven has a shoiver is never even going to be realized. So that would be another reason why we don't want to rely on a shoiver. All right, the Gemara says, well, then let's go back to the matter.
Why we don't want to rely on a shofar?
That's what we're saying, because there's a few possibilities over here. First of all, eventually, Yehuda, whose property was taken away from him in payment of Shimon's Achraios, Yehuda may have bought the Achraios, and eventually he's going to go to Reuven and say, I need reimbursement because of Achraios, and Reuven's going to pull out his shofar. First of all, we're saying maybe by that time, Shimon may well have already taken Paris from the Karka, and it's going to be very hard for Yehuda to get those back. But second of all, even the Karka itself, what if Yehuda bought without Achraios? Then he's never going to go back to Reuven anyhow. So the fact that there's a shoiver in Reuven's hands is never going to come to light anyway.
The shoiver can disprove the Achraios? Is that what you're saying?
The shoiver can disprove that an older shtar that Shimon has on this property is valid. So in other words, again, what we're dealing with over here is Shimon bought a property from Reuven and Tishrei, and they wrote a shtar on it. Later on, Shimon wants a second shtar written also with Achraios on that property, saying that he bought, and that shtar will be dated in Cheshvan. So what we're saying is we don't want that because of the possibility of Knunia like we talked about before. Now what we're saying is, we were asking, why don't we say that let Shimon write out a shoiver to Reuven that says basically from now on, when we look at this field, any shtar on this field that shows that Reuven sold it to Shimon that is not dated Tishrei is invalid. Is invalid. So that way, so fine, when he pulls out his shtar later that says Tishrei, what's the problem? The problem is that we're saying, yes, Reuven is going to have that shoiver. If Shimon goes directly to Reuven and says, I need to be paid for my Achraios, Reuven will pull out the shoiver. The concern is we're saying over here that Shimon may go and collect from Yehuda or other third parties. So first of all, Yehuda may not go to Reuven until later, and second of all, he may not go to him at all because he bought without Achraios.
It doesn't stand. That argument doesn't stand. No document can guarantee whatever happened before its date. That's why it's dated.
I don't know what you mean by guarantee what happened before its date. The shofar says, this field, any shtar not dated Cheshvan Tufshin Pei Hei on this field is presumptively invalid. So on the face of it, that would work then. Now if Shimon pulls out a shtar dated Tishrei Tufshin Pei Hei, then we tell him, sorry, this shofar disproves that. However, again, the problem is that you have third parties involved who may not know of that shofar until later, or who may never know of that shofar because they bought without Achraios.
Yeah, exactly. So why cancel the strength of the shofar? Just cancel.
We're not canceling the strength of the shofar. What we're saying is the shofar may not help us to prevent this knunia from taking place.
You don't have the need for the shofar to help you. The shofar is only proving one thing, that one shtar was established, not anything else.
And the point of that is, therefore, that if Shimon tries to use his two shtaris to exercise his Achraios clause twice, then on the face of it, the shofar will block him from doing that. But we're saying it will not necessarily, because that shofar may only come to light later.
No, the shofar has only enforced the strength of one document, not six or seven.
No. So then you're okay. Then I'm not explaining myself well. The point of the shofar would be that if Shimon goes to Reuven later on and says, "Here, I have a shtar that you sold me this field in Tishrei Tufshin Pei Hei now, and it has Achraios. I want to exercise my Achraios clause. That field was taken away from me because you owed Levi money. I want reimbursement." And then he does the same thing later with another shtar dated Cheshvan Tufshin Pei Hei. Then Reuven will pull out the shofar and say only one of those shtaris is valid. The concern is that Shimon may not go to Reuven for his Achraios. He may go to Yehuda for his Achraios. Yehuda having previously bought Karka from Reuven. And now Yehuda is not going to know there's a shofar out there. Yehuda or Yisachar, whatever, two of them, are not going to know, two different people, are not going to know that there was a shover out there. So each of them is going to end up having to give him the field. Yes, later on, each of them is going to go to Reuven and say, we also bought from you Bachrayus, so we need reimbursement. At that point, the shover will come to light, but at that time, it's too late to deal with the payers. Or again, Yehuda or Yisachar may have bought without Achrayus, and therefore they're not even going to go to Reuven at all. That's what we're talking about.
So you're saying that the shover can be used for multiple creditors?
No, what we're saying is that the shover will prevent, on the face of it, the shover will prevent multiple shtaris, multiple achrayus on the same field from being used. However, it's not foolproof. Yeah, let's go on. Okay. So the question is, Yehochi shtore halvah nami. Well, then in that case, then if we have to be concerned about that, then by a shtar halvah also, why would we say in the first place, why would we have an opinion of Rabbi Yossi that kosvin shoiver? Don't you also have the concern that the malva is going to go take away from lekuchas, and you have a shoiver that said, and again, they don't have the shoiver, and in other words, same kind of scenario, but a little less complicated. You're going to have, let's say, so Reuven has borrowed money from Levi. So Levi has the shtar chayv. He goes and takes away property from Yehuda in payment of the debt. Meanwhile, conceivably, Reuven has a shoiver that he already paid the debt. When Levi goes and takes away from Yehuda, Yehuda doesn't know about it. Only later is he going to come to Reuven and find out that there's a shoiver. Or if he bought shaloi b'achrayus, he's never going to come to Reuven, and therefore Levi will get away with it. How can we allow a shoiver to be written? So even by a halva. And the answer is hosab, because the difference is over there, when it comes to halva, zuzi masik, it's only, after all, it's money that he's owed. So de zuzi masik amri. So people are going to say, paise bal choy bezuzi. You know what? It's quite reasonable that Reuven, the borrower, paid him off with money. So he's going to go ask Reuven, you know what, did you ever pay him back? And Reuven's going to say, yes, and here I have my shoiver, and therefore Yehuda will come to Levi and say, take a hike, you have no business collecting from me when Reuven already has a shoiver that he paid. The problem is, hocha, over here we're talking about land, Aramasik. It's not that he's owed money. He's claiming that I'm owed land in payment of, I previously bought from you Bachrayus, and now I want land back in payment, and because that land was taken away from me. Meida Yadi. So people know full well, demanda mask ara bezuzi le mefayas. Somebody who's owed land is not going to be satisfied with money, because if he just wanted money, he wouldn't have bothered buying the field in the first place. So therefore, nobody's going to go bother asking Reuven, did you pay him off with money? And therefore, they're not going to think to ask him, do you have a shover or anything like that? And therefore, we may find out only much later that there was a shover over here, and that, in fact, Shimon is trying to collect twice on his achrayus for the same field. So when it comes to a halva, we might allow a shover to be written, as we'll learn about tomorrow and the next day, Be'ez Hashem, but when it comes to a mekach memka, we can't do that. All right, the Gemara goes on. Omamar, now we also said in the Braisa, Chutzman Achrayus Shaboy, what we can do is we can write, according to the Tanakhama, a second shtar on the field, but without the Achrayus. Now, the question is, Heichi Kasvinan. So how exactly do we write it? So Omer Rav Nachman de Kasvi Hochi. What they do is they write in the shtar as follows. Shtara Dnan, this shtar, the purpose of it, this shtar is not to be used to collect from Nechosim Meshabadim or from Nechosim Nechorin. So there's no achrayus in it at all. Ela ki heichi de tekum ara biyodid lekeach. It's only for the purpose of the lekeach should be able to prove that he actually owns this field. So therefore, again, that prevents that whole knunya from being able to happen. Because now, later on, if Shimon pulls out that second shtar, then it makes it clear there's no achrayus in it. Therefore, he's never going to be able to go to Yehuda. Therefore, he's never going to be able to go to Yehuda and say, look, Levi took away the field from me. I want reimbursement from you because you bought from Reuven. Because no, Yehuda will tell him, what are you talking about? Your shtar clearly says you have no achrayus. Omer Raphram. So Raphram points out, Zoysemeres, you know what, you can derive from this point of what Rav Nachman is saying, Achrayus Toos Soiferhu. When it doesn't say Achrayus of the Shtar at all, we don't say it means there's no Achrayus, we say it means the Sofer made a mistake and left it out. Because after all, Taima de Kosov Lehochi, we're seeing, according to what Rav Nachman is saying, only when he explicitly writes that there is no Achrayus, then it works. Hole Kosov Lehochi, but if he hadn't written that, Govi, then he would be able to collect. In other words, even though, so in other words, if we just wrote the Shtar generically and said Shimon bought this property from Reuven, and it didn't say anything one way or the other about Achrayus, Shimon would still be able to claim there was Achrayus. Only because it explicitly, and therefore that would still allow the Knunya to work. Only because it says clearly there is no Achrayus, only then does that prevent this whole thing from working. So we see Achrayus, Torah Sefer, if you have a star that does not have Achrayus in it, we still construe it as if Achrayus was written. However, the Gemara says, Rav Ashi says that's not really a solid proof. Not so much that it's not a solid proof. Well, yeah, but it's not a solid proof. But in a case, Rav Ashi is going to actually argue with Rav Nachman's definition of how you write Chutz Me'Achrayus Shabbai. Achrayus Lav Torah Sefer Hu. Rav Ashi says you could say that even if it doesn't say Achrayus, that if in fact it doesn't say Achrayus on the Shtar, then there is no Achrayus. It has to be written explicitly. Umay Chutz Me'Achrayus Shabbai, like Sibbe Achrayus. You know what? When it says Chutz Me'Achrayus Shabbai, it does not have to mean that you write a Nusach like what Rav Nachman says, that were clearly disclaiming Achrayus. It's enough to not write Achrayus at all, and Achrayus Lav Tos Sefer Hu, and therefore there's no Achrayus, and therefore Shimon would not be able to use that to collect from any third parties. The halacha is Achrayus Tos Sefer, and like Rav Nachman, and therefore, yeah, that nusach would have to be written explicitly in order to disclaim Achrayus, and if not, then there is Achrayus. All right, so the Gemara continues with a case that relates to this point about buying fields with Achrayus or without Achrayus. There was a certain woman. Do you have a lezuzila who gavra lemizban la'ara? She gave money to a certain man to buy her a piece of land. So she sent him as a shliach, basically. Ozel zovin l'shaloi b'achrayus. He went and bought the land, but without Achrayus. So either according to Rav Ashi, he didn't have Achrayus written in the shtar, and according to Rav Nachman, he actually had written in the shtar that there is clearly no Achrayus. So whatever the scenario was, the point is there's no Achrayus. Well, here we're talking according to Rav Nachman, so therefore it would have to be, since Rav Nachman says Achrayus Torah Sefer, it would have to be that the shtar explicitly said no Achrayus. Obviously, the guy probably figured that he's getting a better deal that way, because obviously if you're going to be buying Shalei B'Achrayus, then that will lower the price. So maybe the guy figured that he'll get a better deal that way. Whatever the case, Astila Kamed Rav Nachman, the woman went to Rav Nachman. She's saying, what are you, you shliach, you bought without Achrayus. If that field gets taken away, then I lose everything. So Rav Nachman says, you know what, that's a valid point. She can say, that I sent you to fix things up for me, not to mess things up for me. A shliach is only a shliach insofar as he does what the mashaleach would want him to. If you do something wrong, then that means your shlichus is not a shlichus. In fact, you have that in many areas of halacha. For example, you have the whole concept of Einah, for example, where we know that you have a threshold below one sixth difference. If you're overpaid by more than 1/6, then you're moichel, and if it's exactly 1/6, then you're entitled to a refund of that overcharge. And if it's more than that, bitul mekach. But all of that, for example, that applies only if you're doing the transaction yourself. If you send a shliach, then you can always tell the shliach, listen, I wouldn't have bought it at that price. You decided on your own to do that, and that I sent you to do things right, not to do things wrong, and therefore you're not my shliach, and I have the right to disclaim the sale, the purchase. Same thing over here, says Reb Nachman to this shliach. She has a valid point. She can argue that she would have bought it b'achrayus. You used your judgment to buy it shaloi b'achrayus. That's wrong. She can say that the fact that she's bringing you to Beis Din means that she disclaimed that. How do we do to fix it up? Zil zabna mine shloi b'achrayus. What you now have to do is you have to go and buy that field from her without achrayus. V'hoda zabna niyala b'achrayus. And then you sell it back to her with achrayus. And that way she has her achrayus after all. And if the property gets taken away from her because the original seller owed money, then she'll be able to come and demand the money from you, and you won't have any further recourse because you bought it shaloi b'achrayus. So that way, that'll fix up the situation. And that way, she has her achrayus, and you end up possibly on the hook for the fact that you did that shlichus wrongly. The Rashba points out, the Rashba and the Ran point out another way of doing it would be conceivably the shliach could keep the karka and give the money and give the woman back the money, and then give the woman back the money, and she'll go buy a different and she'll go buy a different piece of property. But the Rimi Migash seems to say that he's required to do this either way, unless. Because after all, the seller didn't agree to sell it b'achrayus in the first place, so it's not like you can go back to the seller and tell him you have to sell b'achrayus. He wanted to sell it shaloi b'achrayus, and she can say, "Listen, I want this particular piece of property." So he has to make sure that she has it b'achrayus. Since you can't involve the original seller anymore, then you, the shliach, have to be the go-between to do that. So we've analyzed in detail the opinion of the Chachamim in the Braisa that says that you can't have two shtorim mekach or memker on one field unless the second one is shaloi b'achrayus, again to avoid that whole problem of knunya that we dealt with earlier. Now the Braisa had said Reb Shimon Gamliel's opinion that you can never have two shtoris on the same field. So we'll deal tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with the details of that. Why does Reb Shimon Gamliel have that? We talked about before. Because Osius Nichnas Mimisira, so we'll talk about in that in more detail tomorrow, Bez Hashem.